All right, thank you.
All right. Okay, so let me just continue with this. I just wanted to show how naturally these two verses in Genesis 9, 3 and 4 work together. You see, the concept of not, originally, you know, man was not permitted to eat, to kill an animal, okay? That can be derived from the very same verse, because it says, God said to man, that which is edible, you may eat. That which is fit for eating, you may eat. But in that verse, it doesn't really say what it is that's fit. Of course, to Adam the first, it states previously that you shall eat the grass of the field, meaning the vegetation. Okay, so man was required to respect the function of the animal kingdom and never to interfere at all. That's the way it was at first. He was not permitted to kill an animal. A dead animal he was permitted to eat, but he was not permitted to interfere with the animal kingdom because that God preordained that they should have a certain kind of existence on this planet, and you cannot interfere with that. That's not your designated area, okay? Later, after the flood, God rescinded that, and he said, everything that is alive, you can eat. I gave it to you just as the grass of the field. But, and the next word in verse 4, next word is, but, you cannot eat something which has its life blood in it, which means while it is alive. Okay, the blood is always, the blood in the Bible, people always look at it as a mystical thing. It's not a mystical thing at all. Whenever the Torah says, whenever the Bible says that the blood is the life, that is simply a fact, and every biologist knows that the blood is that carries all the oxygen and all the nutrients and removes the impurities from the cells. Okay, that's simply a biological fact. The heart is important, but the heart is just a pump. The thing that, that which really gives life is the blood, the pipeline. The blood does everything. The heart just simply is a pump to pump the blood around. But the blood is that which gives the nutrients, gives the oxygen, removes the impurities, and the blood is the lifeline for the organism because it supplies every cell with its needs. And that's what the Torah means by blood. It's not a mystical concept. It's simply a biological fact. So the Torah is saying as long as its lifeblood is in it, which means it is alive, so then you are not permitted to partake of it. However, the implication is clear that, see, the two verses say like this. First it says everything that is alive you can eat, and then it says but while it is alive you cannot eat it. Now, what does it mean? It means that you have permission to kill it. In other words, originally you had no permission to kill it because you had to respect its designation in a full measure, which means you can't interfere at all with the animal life. Later, God said, no, even though it's alive, it's under your jurisdiction, but not you can't eat it while it's alive. In other words, you have a right to kill it. Okay? That was given to man after the flood. So the law of the law of not eating the limb of a living creature is really a remnant, or it is a reduction of the original, represents a reduction of the original concept, but it is still the same concept. However, God said to man that man is not capable of this. Serious, it is too much for him to abstain and just live off vegetation, so therefore he gave man the right to kill the animal, but not while it is alive, because while it is alive it is a functioning organism, and then you have no right to break its designation. Okay, so therefore 3 and 4 and 9 fit in beautifully. The concept, and this is where most people who are familiar with Menoch don't understand it. I think it's just being kind to animals. It's not a matter of being kind to animals. Although that is certainly a benefit that we derive. You know, when we speak about the commandments, we say there are many benefits that are derived from commandments, but you have to understand the essential concept. The essential concept is that we have no right to break the order that God placed us in. And when God designates our function, that's the function. Just like with regard to stealing, we have no right to take someone else's property because that is what God designated. The same thing over here. God designated the animal kingdom, and you have no right to interfere. But how much do I have a right to interfere? So there we have a difference. Before the flood, we had no right to interfere at all with the animal kingdom. Just had to eat vegetation. If an animal died, fine, but we had no right to kill the animal. Whereas after the flood, God reduced it, he modified it, and he stated that you can kill the animal, but you still cannot take its limb while it's alive. Then it's still under my designation, and I did not permit you to do that. Okay? So now we see Eiver min ha-chai, the law of the prohibition of removing a limb from the living animal, as an outgrowth of the original law, which was not to kill any animal. Okay, but it is a reduced form of the original law, but the same concept. Okay, now the question is, what can one eat, and how does one? Okay. The answer is really found in the verse itself. And again, with every, you know, we have an oral tradition of how to understand the Torah, but you can never go against the written word of the verse itself. You cannot through oral means. Go against the verse itself. The verse has to make sense the way it is written. And the verse in Genesis 9:3 states clearly, everything that moves, which means every living creature, you can eat. So it is clear that there is no restriction whatsoever with regard to anything that's alive. For insofar as Noah and his sons were concerned, there was absolutely no restriction. Now, we did not have to eat everything, and certain things are distasteful to people, like worms or whatever, but there was no prohibition on that, because the Bible states clearly, everything that moves you may eat. Now, everything that moves includes every living thing, and that's clear. You cannot talk away a verse, no matter the oral law studies the verses, but never contradicts the written word of the verse. Okay, now, that's the principle we have. We say in Hebrew it's called Ein HaMikra Yotze Midei Pshuto. The written law never loses its plain meaning. You can make deductions, concepts, draw from it, and there is much more than appears to the eye when you just look at the written law. When you delve into it and you analyze it, you see much, much more. It is a very deep system. It's God's system. But you cannot negate the words of the Torah itself. And here the word it states clearly that everything, every kind of living thing is permissible. So there is no violation. Now, again, the question is, how do you kill it? So it's quite obvious that since it says, as long as it is alive, okay, that the law is, as long as it is alive, you cannot eat it. So it's quite clear that the moment death takes place, no matter what the method is, it becomes converted to something which is edible, okay? So that's why there is no, as a matter of fact, this is something which I mentioned before. What makes food permissible for the Ben Noach is not the same process that makes food permissible for the Ben Israel. The process that makes food permissible for the Ben Israel is the Shechita, which is a specific kind of slaughtering. The process that makes food permissible for the Ben Noach is simply death. Okay? There is no matter how the animal died, because it just says in verse 9, but. And flesh with its life blood in it, you shall not eat. Which means to say, as long as it's not alive, it's permissible. It does not state anything about how to. There's no statement. The permit, in other words, that which makes it permissible to eat, is simply the fact that it is not alive anymore, no matter what the method. Now, I think I may have mentioned before that there would be a difference in halacha, and the Talmud mentions this. That, for instance, this will be a case where the Ben Noach would be stricter than the Ben Israel, where usually it's the opposite, but in this case it comes out the reverse. For instance, if an animal, once they sever the trachea and the esophagus, with the sharp knife of the shochet. So after that moment, the animal is permissible to be eaten, because that is what permits the Ben Israel to eat it. However, the Ben Noach has to wait until it actually dies. There are many times a few months there that the animal is still alive even after the incision takes place. So during those moments, the Ben Israel would be permitted to partake of the food. Of course, it's a hypothetical case, but it's just to show you the difference. The Ben Israel would be permitted, whereas the Ben Noach would not be permitted until the animal actually dies. Okay, so that's basically the conclusion with regard to this position in the Talmud, which shows how the seven laws are derivable from this remarkable verse that breaks down naturally. As I said before, the importance is not just the derivation, but the concept that we came across in understanding the verse itself. Now, I will. If you have any questions, I'll take them now. If not, I will go further. Okay.
Okay. You know, this is one of my little favorite little passages here.
Okay.
Explain the last number one, the word moving.
Okay.
And secondly, to keep it in the context that everything every moving thing that lives shall be food for you, even as the green herbs have I given you all things.
Right.
So there's obviously some kind of play going on there with something. So explain that aspect, the moving and the green herbs, before we get down to the flesh with a life in it.
Well, and what exactly do you want to explain?
Well, I just
the literal translation.
Yeah, just tell me what it means, because okay. You know I've read the descending, the minority reports on this, and I have a tendency to lean toward the minority report rather than the majority report.
Okay.
On that passage, and then the third thing that you said, that when the throat was cut,
yeah,
for the Ben Israel, he was able to partake. I think you mean there that at that point he can start cutting the flesh away, but he can't eat it until it's salted and...
Well, he can eat it raw.
He can eat it raw without any salt, if the blood's not drained completely.
That's right.
Well, yeah, do that after the first two, because I don't think you've ever taught us that one, because we've always been told that you had to salt it and do all the other stuff.
I can explain that, too, but... All
right, okay.
So, all right, now the verse in Genesis 9:3, the actual translation is every moving thing. The word remes really means creeping, moving, anything which perambulates, which moves on the face of the earth. And then it says, so that clearly indicates every kind of animal. That term is the all-inclusive term for everything in the animal kingdom. So the verse is clear that it means every living thing. Now, when it says, I gave it to you as the grasses, what it means, again here, the reason why the Torah says this, a very good reason why the Torah says this, and it fits in line exactly with what we've been explaining, which means God is realizing that you cannot eat anything unless I gave you permission. And before God, in the beginning of Genesis, God gave man permission to eat from the all the grasses. That's in Genesis 1, verse 29, I believe. Okay. Behold, exact same language. Behold, I gave you every grass that procreates, that's on the face of the earth, and every tree that has fruit. Okay, so there God says, I am designating this to you for eating. Again, in line with the Talmudic explanation that you cannot eat anything without God's designation. All right, man would have to starve philosophically unless God gave him permission. But God did give man permission to eat, and we only eat with the idea that God gave us permission. That's the concept of a bracha, by the way. The main idea of the bracha, of making a bracha before eating, this is so misunderstood. I always hear people say, well, the rabbi has to bless the food. We don't bless food. Food does very well without our blessing. What we do is we enunciate the fact that God gave us the right to eat from this, and without that right, we cannot eat anything. So that's a philosophical concept. We can only do that which God has designated. Fortunately, God has given us the right to eat food, but that's only with his permission. Okay. There, this concept really is derivable straight from the verse itself, because God says that now I'm giving you permission to consume every living thing just like I gave you permission before. In other words, I'm extending the permission. What I said before was limited. Now I'm giving it an extension. But the extension goes so far, it does not extend to the animal while it's alive. Then it's under my designation, which is to function as a living organism on the planet, and you have no right to interfere with that function. Okay? So there we have the philosophy behind the law of the law, which people always find very strange by, you know. People who hear about B'nai Noach immediately say, well, most of them sound okay, but what's this taking this limb from the living animal? How's that fit in? What is that? Like, suddenly kindness to animals comes in here? Like, what is that? No, if you understand it in a philosophical way, see its deep concept, and it fits in there, it's a very important one. It's a basic philosophical principle. Namely, we have no right to just run across this planet, take everything we want. We are not in control here. Whatever we do is based upon God's designation. He created an animal kingdom. He restricted our ability to interfere with the animal kingdom. We cannot just rampantly take anything that we want. And that is a basic philosophical principle in our relationship with God. So the Ben Noach, that which seems out of place, is really very, very much in place. And it is the most basic law with regard to man's relationship to God. That whatever we do is because God has given us the right to do it. He determines what our rights are on this planet, vis-a-vis our fellow man. In other words, that he has possession and we have possession. We cannot take that. That's not our right. And we have no right to interfere in a certain level with the animal kingdom as well. It's an important principle. Very basic. Okay. And that's clear again from the verse in 9:3. That verse makes sense. Now, the point that David mentioned with that, which may sound a little bit shocking, and that is, I said that Ben Israel is permitted to eat right after the slaughter, technically. No one would do such a thing, but we have to understand the technical law as well, even though it's a hypothetical case, but there's a concept behind it. And technically, the Ben Israel is permitted to eat the animal the moment the shochet knife, the incision, has been made in the animal. Now, the question of salting the meat. Salting is only a law with regard to cooked meat, okay? If a person would eat meat raw, there's no need to salt it. Okay, that is a halachic phenomenon, which a lot of people are not aware of. If you barbecue meat, for instance, of course there's no reason to salt it either. There's a cut, just, you know, not to forget the idea of salting, but the law of the Torah is there's no violation. If a person barbecues meat, there's no reason to salt it. Or if he eats it raw, the blood that is prohibited is only blood that we take during the cooking process. It is blood that has gone from one place to another in the meat of the animal. So when you eat it raw, the blood is just eating it the way it is, as is. As is, there's no, you do not need any salting to remove the blood. It's only if you cook it that you're going to need the salting, because it is blood that has moved from one place to another. In the cooking process, the blood will move from its original place and then be fixed in another place. That is the prohibited. Don't ask me the philosophy behind it. I'm not going to go into that. But that is the halacha. So raw meat is always permissible, even without salting. That's why I mentioned that the Ben Israel can technically would be able to eat the meat right after the slaughterer has finished. finished his job, whereas the Benoch would have to wait until the animal actually died. Okay, it's important to know what the, there are two permits here. One is death and one is slaughtering, and they are two different permits, again, based upon the fact that God designates the law and gives us the permit. It's important to know precisely what God says. Any questions pertaining to that? Okay. Yes?
Mr. Buchanan, Gary has one.
You may have covered it, and I may have missed it, but from the passage in Genesis where it talks about the green herb,
right?
Were there any herbs at that time that were harmful to man?
Oh, yes.
And if there were, how did mankind know that? And can you make that same comparison to meat?
Comparison to?
Is there meats that's harmful to man?
Yes.
Just like the green herb, can you make that comparison to those two?
Okay. The question is about harmful things that are harmful to man. When God created the world, He created the world with many different plants, and God's pharmacy out there. I mean, there are. I'm sure everybody's aware of the fact that. Most of the medications that we have come from the plants, and especially the jungles. And that's one of the harmful things that man is doing by destroying the rainforest and the jungles, where there are many, many plants that Indians and people who live in the wild know that are beneficial, and modern man also has them. I mean, digitalis and many, many things that God created that are medications for man. Man did not instruct man as to what those things are, but that is part of the mandate that was given to man, where it says, "Vikivshuha," and you shall conquer it, which means man is to use his mind and his intelligence to understand the creatures. That's why we find Adam the first, that his first thing he was doing was classifying the different animals, studying them, classifying them, and that's what it means when it says he called them names, just classified them, and he studied them, and based upon his study of them, he gave them different classifications. That was the first scientific approach to nature, and that is mentioned in Genesis. So that aspect was given to man with his intelligence to study nature and to determine which herbs are harmful, which are beneficial for him, which are under certain circumstances, like medications, and which are not beneficial, at all, which are completely poisonous. That was given over to man to study. That's man's function, his divine element, which he was instructed to use in order to subdue nature, okay? In that sense, man has the right to, that was given again, permission by God to subdue nature means to study nature and to avail oneself of nature for human benefit, okay? But it doesn't mean subdue that he has complete jurisdiction of everything. And yes, he does have a lot of jurisdiction, but he also has to recognize that he's limited. But that was completely given over to man in terms of his knowledge. Adam the first was a person that studied nature. Matter of fact, the Talmud tells us that when Adam the first was driven out of the Garden of Eden, so he saw that nightfall was in place, and he became frightened, and he said, maybe this is what God meant when he said, I'm going to die. And the Talmud states that he and Eve cried that night, and they repented because they thought that the sun is gone, and he thought that he's going to die, the planet's going to fall. Then when he saw the sun rise the next morning, he said, oh, this is one of God's laws. This is a law of nature. And the same thing was true with as the days of the year, as the days started to get smaller, And it approached the winter solstice. Again, he thought that maybe this is his punishment, and holiday, celebrating the fact that he wasn't going to die, and that this is merely a reflection of God's beautiful system of nature. And the Talmud says that was in opposition to the idolaters who made a festival around that time in December to celebrate the return of the sun god. So, again, it shows us, and this is an extremely important principle, that recognition of God's laws of nature is a part of Torah, and the idolater doesn't enjoy the recognition of the laws of nature. The idolater just looks for forces, mystical forces, and that is really the one of the fundamentals of the idolatrous mind, whereas the Torah mind was a nature, and once he sees that it is a law of nature, he recognizes that this is a beautiful thing that God has created in his infinite wisdom as expressed in the universe. So Adam, the natural law, he said, oh, this is not a, he was happy to find that this is not a punishment, this is not an act of divine providence interceding. On the contrary, this is part of God's natural law, his natural system. And man is commanded to study the natural law and to understand the wisdom of the beauty of the natural law, as the prophets state in many places. The heavens declare the glory of God. That means the study of the universe is something which the which a person is enjoined to do, to recognize the God's infinite wisdom. So this is all part of man functioning with his divine element, and under that category comes the study of the animal kingdom and the vegetation and biology and the study of zoology and plant life, and all this is the function of man, his ability to comprehend and to understand and to study nature. So God did not give man, did not tell man in that area, did not help man. He didn't tell him what is harmful, what is not. He expected man to have a curiosity and use his intellect to discover and to learn about God's laws and to study nature and to be able to understand it and use it for his own benefit. Okay, that is very much against the common religious emotion. The man-made religions usually frown on knowledge. They just want divine intervention for everything. But that is not the Torah view. That is where man really is able to see the greatness of the Creator and understanding the beautiful ideas behind God's universe. That's part of our religion, God's religion. Okay? Any other questions? I think we're about running out of time.
Well.